Welcome back, everyone, to another deep dive. Today, we're going way back, like way back, to the first century AD, to the ancient city of Philippi.
Ooh, first century AD, that's exciting.
I know, right? And we have a great guide for this journey. We're going to be looking at the work of Dr. Daniel K. Darko, specifically his lecture series on the prison epistles.
The prison epistles?
Yeah, and we'll be zeroing in on session 8, which really sets the stage for the book of Philippians. But here's the thing. Philippi wasn't just any ancient city.
Oh.
Yeah, it was a Roman colony with this fascinating mix of Greek and Roman culture. It was even involved in some pretty major historical events.
I'm intrigued. What kind of historical events are we talking about?
Well, think Shakespeare, Julius Caesar. Remember the whole Brutus and Cassius thing?
Oh, yeah, the assassination.
Yeah, well, Philippi was actually the site where they were defeated by Mark Antony and Octavian.
Wow, so we're talking about a place steeped in history. A real crossroads of cultures.
Exactly. And that's what makes this deep dive so interesting. Understanding the city of Philippi will really help us unlock deeper meaning in the book of Philippians.
Right, because the context shapes the message.
Exactly. So let's start with the basics. Tell us a little about Philippi. What was it like?
Well, like you mentioned, Philippi had this really unique identity. It started as a Greek city named after, you guessed it, Philip of Macedon, you know, Alexander the Great's father.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But then it became a Roman colony. That meant they adopted Roman law, customs, the whole shebang.
So basically like a mini Rome, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You can actually see that in the archaeological findings. Dr. Darko points out all these Roman architectural features, forums, bathhouses, even a public latrine with a pretty advanced sewage system.
Wait, a sewage system?
Yeah.
Like in the first century AD?
Yeah, flushing toilets.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive for that time.
That's amazing.
Mm.
But getting back to this mini Rome idea, wouldn't that make the early Christians in Philippi stand out?
Oh, absolutely. Because Roman citizenship came with a certain level of pride and privilege. And that's going to create some interesting tensions when we look at Paul's message of equality in Christ.
Ah, so we've got this backdrop of Roman law and order, but also this mix of different religions and spiritual beliefs. What was the religious landscape like in Philippi?
It was a real melting pot. You had the worship of Isis, the Egyptian goddess. Then you had the patron deity, Sibyl, who was a mother goddess. There was also a lot of magic and astrology going on.
Wow, so a real mix of spiritual ideas. But one thing that Dr. Darko mentions that I found really interesting is that there's no evidence of a significant Jewish community in Philippi.
And that's a really important detail because it helps explain why Paul's letter to the Philippians is so unique.
How so?
Well, unlike many of his other letters, there are almost no direct references to the Old Testament in Philippians.
Oh, that makes sense. He's tailoring his message to this predominantly Gentile audience. So how does Christianity arrive in this bustling Roman colony?
Well, if we turn to Acts chapter 16, we see Paul arriving in Philippi, and one of the first people he encounters is a woman named Lydia.
Lydia?
Yeah, Lydia. She was a businesswoman and a worshiper of God, and her conversion becomes a key moment for the early church in Philippi.
It's interesting that she's described as a worshiper of God. It suggests she was already seeking something more, maybe something the traditional Roman gods couldn't offer.
Right. And that's something we see quite a bit in early Christianity. Many early converts were these God-fearers, Gentiles, who were drawn to Judaism but hadn't fully converted. And Lydia's story actually highlights a bigger trend, the prominent role of women in the Philippian church.
So women were front and center in this early Christian community. That's definitely something to keep in mind as we move forward.
Absolutely. Now, of course, Paul's visit to Philippi wasn't without its challenges.
Oh, what happened?
Well, he encountered a slave girl who had this spirit of divination. And when Paul cast out that spirit, it caused quite a stir.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
What happened next?
Well, let's just say it didn't end well for Paul. He ended up getting thrown in prison.
Wait, in prison? So Paul ends up in prison in Philippi. But isn't he writing to the Philippians from another prison, probably in Rome?
Exactly. And this incident in Philippi is actually pretty important because it's here that we first see Paul asserting his Roman citizenship.
Ah, to protect himself from unjust treatment.
Precisely. So his Roman citizenship plays a crucial role in this story, both in Philippi and later on. Okay, so now let's fast forward a bit and talk about the letter itself. What do we know about when and why Paul wrote this letter to the Philippians?
Well, we know it's one of his prison epistles, probably written from Rome. But what was his purpose in writing to the Philippians? What was he trying to convey?
Dr. Darko identifies several key purposes. Paul wanted to update the Philippians on his situation, express his gratitude for their support, warn them about potential dangers, and most importantly, encourage them to stand firm in their faith even when things got tough.
And the letter to the Philippians is known for being one of Paul's most joyful letters. That seems a bit odd, considering he's writing from prison, would you say?
You would think, right. But that's what makes this letter so fascinating. Despite his circumstances, Paul chooses to focus on joy, unity, and perseverance. It's almost as if his imprisonment becomes this backdrop for a much deeper message about finding strength and hope in Christ, no matter what you're going through.
Okay, I'm definitely getting more and more intrigued. But before we dive too deep, I have to ask about something Dr. Darko mentioned. This idea that Philippians might actually be two letters combined. Can you tell us more about that?
Oh, yeah, the two-letter theory. It's interesting. Some scholars think that because there are these sort of abrupt shifts in tone throughout the letter, it must be a combination of two separate letters.
Like maybe Paul started one letter, then something happened, and he started a new one, and somehow they got combined.
Yeah, something like that. But Dr. Darko argues that those shifts in tone are actually pretty typical of ancient rhetorical strategies.
So for our purposes, we'll be approaching Philippians as one unified letter.
Exactly. And I think taking that approach will help us better appreciate the flow of Paul's argument and the kind of emotional arc of the letter as a whole.
Now, there's one more thing that stood out to me from Dr. Darko's lecture. He pointed out this unique vocabulary used in Philippians. He said there are all these words and phrases that don't appear anywhere else in the New Testament.
That's a really good observation, and it suggests that Paul was really intentional about his language. He carefully crafted this letter to resonate with the specific context of Philippi and his own circumstances as a prisoner in Rome.
So it's not just a letter, it's a conversation. We're eavesdropping on this very specific exchange between Paul and the Philippians.
Yeah.
And we can only truly understand it if we understand the world they lived in.
Exactly. The context is key. It gives us a whole new level of insight into what Paul is saying, and more importantly, why he's saying it.
All right. I think we've laid some good groundwork here. We've got this picture of Philippi, its culture, the religious landscape, a bit about the letter itself. Now I'm ready to dive into the heart of Paul's message.
Let's do it. I'm ready to unpack those deeper themes.
Okay, so we've got this picture of Philippi, this Roman colony, with its mix of Greek heritage and its diverse religious landscape. And in this very structured, very Roman world, Christianity arrives. It's fascinating to think about how that dynamic played out.
Yeah, it really is. And Dr. Darko points out that it wasn't some grand entrance, you know. The early church in Philippi started small. We see Paul initially interacting with these small groups, often women like Lydia, who are drawn to this new faith.
That's right, Lydia. This successful businesswoman, a worshiper of God, but clearly seeking something more. She opens her home, her heart, to this new community. What do you think she found so compelling in Paul's message?
That's a great question. And it points to a larger pattern we see in early Christianity. Women played these crucial roles, spreading the gospel, hosting gatherings, providing vital support. It challenges a lot of traditional assumptions about the role of women in the early church.
Absolutely. And it's interesting because later on, when Paul's writing to the Corinthians about generosity, he actually points to the Macedonian churches, including Philippi, as models of giving. Even out of their own poverty, they were incredibly generous.
Exactly. It's like this generosity was woven into the fabric of the Philippian church. And it makes you wonder if those strong female figures like Lydia played a part in shaping that culture of giving.
It's definitely food for thought. So we have this image of the Philippian church as this vibrant, generous community, but also one facing its own unique challenges. Paul is writing to them from prison, knowing that they are facing their own struggles, threats to their faith. And one thing I keep coming back to is how his Roman citizenship plays into all of this.
Right. It's a crucial piece of the puzzle. Remember, Philippi is a Roman colony. Citizenship is this mark of privilege, of power. And Paul, even in chains, is a Roman citizen. That's going to have an impact on how his message is received.
Yeah, it adds this whole other layer to the letter. It's not just some abstract legal detail. We see how his citizenship protected him from unjust treatment in Philippi. And now, as a prisoner in Rome, it likely affords him some level of protection and influence.
And it raises this really interesting question. How does Paul navigate his Roman identity in this letter? He's calling the Philippians to find their true citizenship in heaven, yet he's also very aware of the power dynamics at play in the Roman world.
It's almost like a paradox. He's advocating for this kingdom that transcends earthly boundaries, but he's doing it within the very real context of Roman power and authority.
Exactly. And don't forget about the threat of the Judaizers. those Jewish Christians who insisted that Gentile converts had to adopt Jewish customs to be truly saved. How do you think Paul addressed that in this Roman colony where a strong Jewish presence seems to be missing?
It does seem like he takes a different approach in Philippians than in some of his other letters.
You're right. Instead of directly countering their arguments, he emphasizes unity. It's as if he's saying, look, our shared identity in Christ is more important than our cultural differences. We're one in him, regardless of our backgrounds.
So instead of getting bogged down in the specifics of Jewish law, he's elevating the conversation to this higher level of unity and shared purpose in Christ.
Precisely. And he does it with this incredible warmth and affection, reminding them of their shared joy, calling them to emulate Christ's humility and selflessness.
It's striking how he writes with such joy and hope, even though he's imprisoned. You'd think he'd be more focused on his own suffering.
It's really remarkable. It's almost like he's saying, yes, life is hard, but our hope is in Christ. That's where we find true freedom. Freedom from fear, freedom from division, freedom from this need to prove ourselves.
He's modeling this way of life that embraces both suffering and joy. It's a powerful message for the Philippians then and for us today.
Absolutely. And Dr. Darko highlights how Paul weaves together personal anecdotes, theological reflections, even these powerful metaphors to create this tapestry of meaning. It's not just instruction. It's an invitation to a whole new way of life.
It's like he's painting this picture of what it means to follow Christ, to find strength in him, even when things are really tough.
Right. And one of the strategies he uses to do this is what Dr. Darko calls praise and blame. He praises things like unity, humility, generosity. And he contrasts those with their opposites, division, self-promotion, greed.
So he's highlighting the values, the behaviors that should characterize their lives as Christians.
Exactly. And it's all wrapped up in this language of affection and encouragement that really makes Philippians such a compelling letter to read.
Okay, so we've talked about the context, the challenges, the overall tone. Now I'm ready to get into the specifics. How does Paul actually do this? What are the key themes and strategies he uses to convey this message of hope and joy in the face of adversity? All right, so we've been talking about this idea of joy amidst suffering, this sort of paradoxical message that runs through Paul's letter. But how does he actually pull that off? How does he communicate that to the Philippians?
Well, one of the first things that really stands out is how he talks about his own imprisonment. He could have easily just focused on the hardship, the injustice of it all, but he doesn't. He actually kind of flips the script.
Right. Instead of complaining, he presents his chains as this opportunity, a chance to advance the gospel.
Exactly. He finds a way to see his suffering, his limitations as a platform for God's work.
It's kind of amazing how he does that.
It really is. And it's a powerful example for us, right? It shows us that we can find meaning and purpose even in the most difficult circumstances. He even tells the Philippians that his imprisonment has actually encouraged others to speak out more boldly for Christ.
So it's like his suffering has this ripple effect, inspiring courage in others.
Exactly. And that brings us to one of the central themes of Philippians, joy. It's a word that pops up again and again throughout the letter.
And we've talked about how this isn't just surface-level happiness, right? It's this deep, abiding joy, a peace that transcends your circumstances. But how does Paul expect them to find this joy when they're facing their own struggles?
Well, he doesn't shy away from the reality of their suffering. He acknowledges their concerns, their anxieties, but he points them to a source of joy that goes beyond their immediate circumstances, their relationship with Christ.
So it's not about denying the hardship, but about finding a source of strength and hope that can kind of carry you through it.
That's it. And he uses his own experience as an example. You know, he tells them, look, I'm in prison, but I can still experience joy because of my relationship with Christ.
So it's this really powerful testimony to the power of faith, right? It can change everything.
It really can. And this joy he's talking about, it's not meant to be this solitary thing. He repeatedly calls for unity among the Philippians.
Unity.
Yeah, he urges them to put aside their differences, their petty disagreements, and work together. He really emphasizes the importance of working together for the sake of the gospel.
That's interesting, especially considering the context of Roman society where divisions were often emphasized.
It is. And it makes his message even more radical. He's calling them to a different kind of community, a community marked by humility and selflessness.
So it's about more than just getting along. Right?
Oh, yeah, much more. He links this call for unity to their identity as citizens of heaven.
citizens of heaven.
Yes. He reminds them that their true allegiance is to Christ, not to Rome, not to their earthly status or position.
So it's about having this higher loyalty, this deeper sense of belonging that should shape their relationships with each other and their interactions with the world around them.
Absolutely. It's about living as citizens of a different kingdom, a kingdom where love and unity are the defining characteristics.
And that's got to be a tough call, especially in a world that values power and self-preservation.
It is. But Paul doesn't sugarcoat things. He knows it's going to be a struggle, a constant battle. He urges them to stand firm in their faith, to persevere, you know, to keep running the race with endurance. He reminds them that the real prize awaits them.
And that's a message that still resonates today, right? We still face our own challenges, our own divisions, things that threaten to steal our joy and pull us apart.
It's so true. But Paul's letter to the Philippians offers this timeless antidote, you know. It's a reminder that true joy, that deep down joy, is found in our relationship with Christ. It's a reminder that unity is possible, even in the midst of diversity. And it's a reminder that our ultimate hope lies beyond this world.
It's pretty remarkable to think that a letter written from prison almost 2,000 years ago can still speak to us so powerfully today. It just goes to show you the power of Paul's message. So as we wrap up this deep dive, what stands out to you the most? What's the one thing you really want our listeners to take away from this exploration of Philippians?
That's a good question. I think the biggest takeaway is that Paul's message of joy and unity isn't just a nice idea. It's a call to action. It's a challenge to find that same joy, that same unity in our own lives, even amidst all the complexity and challenges of our modern world.
Absolutely. And if Paul could find joy and unity while he was imprisoned, how much more should we strive for it in our own lives? It's definitely something to think about.
It really is. And to all of you listening out there, as you continue to explore the book of Philippians, armed with all this context and these insights we've discussed, I really want to encourage you to consider how this ancient letter speaks to your own life today. Think about the challenges you're facing, the places where you need to find strength and hope. How can you be an agent of unity and joy in your own community, in your own sphere of influence? It's a journey worth taking.
It really is. And I want to thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the world of Philippi and the timeless message of Paul's letter to the Philippians. We hope you've gained some new insights and a deeper appreciation for the power of this incredible text. Until next time.